Welcome back to The Brandon White Show, where we have conversations worth listening to give you an edge to win in your business and your life. I'm your host, Brandon White. Here we go. Marika, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Never better. Did I get your name correctly? I practiced it.
Almost. It's Marika.
Marika.
Yes.
There you go. Well, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I was super excited because I was reading about your business, and then I found out that you and I actually went to the same business school. And
we
said, it's a very, very small world.
Yes. I think we both went to the Erasmus School of Management.
That we did. And I spent some time in Rotterdam and Amsterdam.
Great. Well, I used to live in Rotterdam during my studies, and I moved to Amsterdam about, say, maybe 10 years ago.
10 years. Well, Amsterdam's a pretty cool town. It's a very interesting town for people who might not be used to the, well, there's a lot of bikes for one, but
yes.
Besides a lot of bikes, there was always a lot of cannabis, which wasn't legal in the United States for a long time. And then effectively the escort business is completely legal. So you go to these, you walk down these streets, and it's a little bit different than walking down a city street in the United States.
Yeah. Well, it's the escorting business is only legal if you have a permit.
fair enough. So for listeners' sake, can you go in to talk a little bit about your business and how you came up with it? Because you run, from all the research that I've done, the leading escort business, if not in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, but around Europe.
I do. So the way I got started is the most common question, I guess. I was in between my bachelor and my master degree at Erasmus University, the one that we were both at. And it's very uncommon for university students to go on, well, like an internship kind of. But I did anyway, because I really didn't have a clue what I really wanted to do. Because then you get this choice, like, okay, which master do you want to do? Do you want to go into HR? Do you want to do marketing, accounting? I really didn't know. So I thought, okay, I'll try those internships just to get a feeling of what it's like to work within a company of such a nature. And the only thing that I really learned was that apparently I'm quite a bad employee. It's not my cup of tea. The 9 to 5, every day the same thing is not my cup of tea, but also the having a boss who tells you what to do and the hierarchy within the company, it didn't really suit me as a person. So that's when the idea of having my own business kind of dawned on me. But then the next question, of course, is what am I going to be in? If I'm going to have my own business, then what will it be in? And by coincidence, I met a lady who was a student at the same university, different field though. She was a glamour model and got a lot of proposals. And she came up with the idea of starting an escort service. And since she didn't have a clue about the business side of it, she asked me, well, we got talking and we decided to start it together. And that was quite the adventure, I must say. And a couple of years along the road, I did a buyout and I proceeded alone.
So what were the adventures in between? I mean, I wouldn't even know how to start an escort business. Basically, I guess you have to go through a whole permitting process. Did you build a business plan? Did you go out on your own to figure out what the environment was? Like, how did you even figure that out? Because it doesn't sound like you had any experience necessarily in that business.
No, but I think because I always approached it as I would any other business, I think that's what made me successful in this business as well. Because you have a lot of entrepreneurs who think, oh my gosh, it's an escort service, so I have to do something different. And at the end of the day, it's a business like any other. You have to do your admin, you have to pay your taxes, you have to make sure your personnel is doing a good job, and you have to manage those people, and you have to make it as easy as possible for people to do their work. And that's no different with any other business. And I've always looked at it like that. I think the first step, of course, was obtaining a permit. I did make a business plan, but that was mostly because I wanted to present something to my parents, who, of course, were not all that excited about the new venture that I was getting myself into. But then, I mean, they know better than to say no. I mean, I wasn't asking for permission. I was 21 already, so living on my own, making my own choices. But of course, they had a had their own opinion about it. And I remember us applying for the permit, and then you're invited at the police station. They have this team for, well, they call it a prostitution and control team. And it was, I think for at that time, I was quite impressed because I entered the room and there's this, in the way I recall it at least, this big table with all these important looking people, someone from the health department, someone from the police, someone from the municipality, and all those people asking me questions like, well, how are you going to do this? What are your plans? And we were there like, yeah, well, we're just, you know, going to do it like this. And very blue at the time. But yeah, we got the permit.
Well, you did get the permit. Did you have an idea how you were going to meet the people who work for you? I mean, did you, you didn't solicit people in your business class, or maybe you did, but.
No, that's illegal.
So it is.
Yeah, you cannot actively recruit people to work in prostitution. It's at
really?
The end of, I mean, you can call it whichever way you want, sex work or what, but it is and it will remain a form of sex work or prostitution or whatever you want to call it. It's on a different spectrum of that line of work, but it's still within the same industry. And you're not supposed to go out and ask people in the street to come work for you. That's not, it's not allowed. But
so is that?
Luckily, that problem was solved really easy, because if you have two university students who start an escort service, that's quite a popular topic to write about in newspapers and magazines.
So I was going to ask you how you actually, because it would seem that out of the gate, if you can't recruit people, then that makes it hard. But if you were getting press, did you know that that was going to be your strategy?
No, we just went with the flow. It happened. We had this magazine at Erasmus University, the Erasmus magazine. I'm not sure if you recall it. And we requested to place an advertisement in it to look for staff for our company. And they declined that request. But 2 months later, they did invite us for an interview. So problem solved.
That got you press. Yeah, that got you the press. And then did men and women start? I think most people comes to mind that this is only women, but there are men, which we can talk about. But did they start calling you at that point?
You mean clients?
Yeah, no, your employees. Did people start applying for a job after they read the article?
Yeah, well, first of all, we don't call it employees. I do pay taxes for everybody, and it is a corporation that is recognized by the tax authorities as me employing a person. But in a traditional employment, I am someone's boss. With this line of work, I am nobody's boss. The escorts are always free to decide when they want to work, where they want to work, with whom they want to work. And so it's not a traditional employment in that sense. So I always say I work together with people. Nobody works for me. But yes, people started applying, men and women. But in the beginning, we did have a few men, but I was focused on the ladies to work with. And that changed only, I don't know, like 4 years ago when I started my gigolo department.
What made you do that?
The requests came from clients. The mostly couples that I booked a lady with society service, and they said that was a nice experience, and then they wanted to change things up and invite a gentleman over. And I mean, I often have to say no within this line of work. There are many, many requests I receive every day that I say no. It's not possible because I don't want to offer that type of service or the request that is being made. But sometimes I have to say no because I can't fulfill the requests. Not because I don't want to, but because I don't have the means to do so. And if that's the case, then, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit within me starts to bubble up and think, how are we going to change this?
So in United States terms, the people, they are quote unquote employees, but you do not direct them. So they're really independent contractors who are attached to your company. They make their own decisions. You give them an opportunity. You say, here's the opportunity. And they say yes or no.
It's a little bit in between. They have the freedom of a freelancer or independent contractor, but tax-wise, it looks a lot more like employment.
And do they work for other escort services, or do you ask that they only work for you?
So because it's a legal profession, there are certain things that are taken care of. For example, I cannot demand a person to work exclusively for me. But in the line of business that I am in, all the ladies and gentlemen I work with, they are doing either a full-time studies or have a full-time job. And this is just something they do on the side. So it's something extra for them. On average, they do between 3 and 10 bookings a month. So it's very uncommon for someone to work with several agencies because they simply don't have the time, but it's definitely not forbidden.
So this is actually a way for students, people in the United States will maybe frown on this, although I guess you could do this in Nevada, I think. But it's basically a way for students to pay their way through school.
Yeah, definitely. Because look at it this way, the average student will make, I don't know, maybe like 10, 12 euros an hour. With a regular job after taxes. So you'll have to work to maybe 3 full days a week to make a living or to make ends meet. And that's not a lot of money then. As an escort, you would have to do maybe 1 booking of a couple of hours to make that same amount that the other student will make in working a full week. So it gives you, looking at it like that, it will give you a lot more time to spend on your studies or your friends or whatever makes you happy.
And you don't have anybody who does this full time? It seems like it would be hugely lucrative.
No, they have a Dutch saying. I'm not sure it translates really well, but if you eat steak every day, it doesn't taste good anymore.
That's fair.
So I think the nature of this line of work is it's so intimate that I don't think you could do this on a daily basis and still enjoy it. And at the end of the day, these are the ladies and gentlemen I work with. They do this type of work because to them, this is the most fun way to make a living. Just like you've chosen to make podcasts and I have chosen to run a business. Those ladies and gentlemen, they have chosen to do this line of work because they think this is the best way to make their money and what they enjoy the most. That's no different.
Are the cultural norms, I guess, different, do you find, throughout Netherlands, or is this a very local Amsterdam type experience? I'm just curious. Your parents weren't excited, but your parents live in the country and they must know that this happens all the time. So it's more common than uncommon in the sense that it is a regular business.
It's not a regular business. There are just a few businesses, just a few companies like mine in the Netherlands.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and in the high-end sector, it's a handful nationwide. They estimate there are about 50,000 people working in this line of business. And now we're not a big country, so that's it's not super small, but it's not like a common line of work, not at all. And people have strong opinions about it. And often those opinions aren't very positive.
Yeah, why do you think that is?
I think because the media usually only portrays two sides of the story. On the one end of the spectrum, there's me and the escorts I work with. That's then usually the more glamorous side is emphasized, like the 5-star hotels, private yachts, rich clients, wining and dining part. And then all the way on the other end of the spectrum, there's the forced into this line of business or out of necessity, financial necessity, pushed by boyfriends, not completely voluntarily doing this line of work in poor conditions. And there's a lot in between that's almost never talked about and almost never shown on articles or media. So those are the two things that people hear about. And it's very difficult to imagine what it's really like to do this kind of work.
I would imagine it's actually scary because if you don't have a regular client and you're going to meet someone for the first time, I mean, it could be very scary. So I imagine you bring people through some sort of screening process on your
end. Yeah, that's what the agency is for, to screen clients for you. Well, it's one of the many tasks, but screening clients is definitely one of the more important ones for. I mean, I have 17 years of experience, but a common misunderstanding is that clients will be rude or even worse, that they will be violent. that has never happened. We've had our share of rude people and people who don't behave the way we want them to. But violence has never been used against the escorts. And that doesn't only go for my agency. That also goes for the other high-end agencies that are based in the Netherlands. So luckily, it's not a gigantic risk.
And do you put them through background checks? Do you talk to them? How do you do that?
I speak to each client personally, not face to face, but on the phone. But I think after doing this for a long time, you get a bit of a gut feeling that tells you if something is off or not. Luckily, most clients make my life very easy and they'll send a booking request and they'll say, hi, my name is this, 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 and this is what I do for work. In my spare time, I enjoy, I don't know, walking in the forest, painting, whatever. And they'll tell me a lot about themselves, which gives me a bit of a feeling about who I'm dealing with. And then if that feeling is confirmed when I speak to them on the phone, then I would say that's a big part of the screening process. Just my gut feeling. And then, of course, there are the more technical checks that you do.
Do you have a lot of repeat customers over the years?
Yes. I would say, I never calculated the amount, but I would say 80 to 90% I hear from again. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about this as it relates to something like marijuana, where it's legal, but you still have this underground illegal activity goes on that hurts the legal people who are running a legitimate business because they're escaping of many things, taxes, but even more so, as you explained, giving a bad reputation to an industry with a group of people who are trying to run it legally. Does that happen in the Netherlands?
Yeah, it does. You read about it all the time. People who rent out apartments and, well, bluntly puts four ladies to work in a small apartment, one client after the other. It doesn't necessarily mean those ladies aren't there voluntarily, but the circumstances could be much, much better. And well, you're saying it does hurt the image of the industry as a whole. It doesn't hurt my business that much. And personally, I think if you run a business like that, whether it's in this line of work or any other, like if you're working in construction and you hire a bunch of illegal Eastern European people to work for you and put them up in a small apartment cramped up, that's not a sustainable business plan. You will get caught eventually and you'll lose everything over it. The chances of succeeding with illegal practices are so small. And you'll always have to look back like, is nobody catching up with me? I mean, I would think it's very stressful to work like that.
I would think so too. You always have somebody looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
And ultimately, someone tells.
Yeah.
And then you pay either way.
So yeah.
What has been the most challenging part of your business? Because in many ways, you've described it and you said, well, I just approached it like a normal business, which is a services business,
mm-hmm.
whether someone was cleaning houses, mowing yards, a plumber or something like that. But what's been the most challenging part of running a business for you?
Well, running a business would be the balance between private and work. I really had to find my way to get that, well, balanced. But the most challenging about running an escort service like Society Service is that although you are operating fully legal, paying your taxes like any other business, you are excluded from lots of services that are readily available to many other entrepreneurs. And it's very frustrating and annoying. On the other hand, it makes you look outside the box, makes you more creative. And I always find a solution for whatever I'm confronted with. But it would be nice if I would be treated like any other business.
What services are you cut off from?
Anything and everything. While running Society Service, I've had telecom providers refuse me, my bank trying to kick me out, my private bank kicking me out. So not just my business account, but my private account. You're excluded from any type of insurance. Payment platforms like accepting a credit card is quite difficult, or any other type of payment platform. It's usually any financial service, really, contrary to what you may think. Cryptocurrency also declines us. The bigger ones, they all say no to my business. So you're in this list of excluded businesses, and in that list is like illegal guns, gambling, like really like illegal stuff. And then there's escort services.
So it's really the stigma of it, even though you're doing something completely legal,
yeah,
that they basically just don't want that reputation.
Yeah, I think they don't want to be associated with it. For example, the credit cards merchant that we work with, they canceled one of our contracts after they were taken over by an American partner. And they had a different, well, they call it their integrity policy no longer matches your business. That's what they'll then tell you. And it was just because they changed leadership, really.
I find the irony of it. I can understand it when you describe it. And I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not saying it's right.
No.
But you could understand if you were on their side. Having said that, I find it ironic, and I don't know that this is true, so listeners, you have to fact check me, but I know that it was true at one time. Now that the internet has proliferated, it may have changed. But it turns out that Disney at one time was the largest distributor of porn.
Really?
Because they own the hotel cable channels.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And nobody wanted to talk about that. And I'm sure that it's up there, but as you and I know, the internet probably changed some of that dynamic. But there's all of these things that make money that people don't want talked about that they're actually doing. So it's just very ironic. It's ironic to me, as you were talking, I was thinking, and someone could say, well, Brandon, you're taking this to the extreme. Maybe, but we advertise fast food, and there is absolutely nothing good about fast food other than making you fat, chemicals, and eating a lot of sugar that's bad for you. I mean, that's a drug. It's just sort of weird how society frames these things based on sometimes a very small group of people, ironically.
Yeah.
That decide that it's not good.
Yeah, and who's to say what's not good? I mean, what may not work for one person may be different for another. I mean, if alcohol would be invented now, it would never have been legal. Yet, you can't really watch a movie without seeing wine or champagne or whatever. It's very normal to drink alcohol.
It is, and that's a drug. I mean, there's just so many things that, especially in today's day and age, that they just buy a very small group of people. And of all the things, it's very weird. Sex is a subject that people, it makes them uncomfortable, but you can all go back like past the Egyptian walls and art, that there's just been this sex going on forever. It's just, it's really weird how it happens all the time, but people don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. But if I go to a birthday party and I tell them what profession I have, it's all they talk about.
Because they're intrigued?
Yeah. And in the beginning, the questions are more like, oh, and like you know, like, how did you get into this line of work? And how come? And what's it like? And if there's more alcohol, then the questions will get a little bit more straightforward.
Well, to be honest, I was interested in you because you're not the traditional business. You run the best at, from my research, one of the top escort services in Europe and maybe the world, because that's really the epicenter of this type of service. And why wouldn't you be seen as just as valid as an entrepreneur, business owner, as anyone else? In fact, I would think that it's actually wildly lucrative. A good friend from business school that was in business school when we studied at RSM in an international program was originally from Nicaragua. And after business school, I went to Nicaragua for about a month with him just to see that part of the world and actually to look at what type of business we might be able to start importing or doing something down there. And his grandmother, one night at dinner, we would eat with his grandparents most nights. And when we were at his main family house, and his grandmother said, I think you boys, and I'm interpreting because it was in Spanish, but she said, I think you're making this way too complicated. All you have to do is figure out men's vices and women's vanity, and you'll make money forever with this, with that idea. And I was like, well, maybe not what you want to tell someone after you spend $100,000 on an MBA, but that's probably actually practical advice. And I think that to this day, if you look at the very lucrative businesses, that there's probably something to be said for that.
Well, I don't think that's running. Well, it depends what your definition of very lucrative is, of course, but a company
profitable.
Well, it's I run a profitable business, but it will never make me like super mega rich. You easily reach a maximum. And beyond that, I don't think I could maintain the quality of service that is offered now. I have 40 female escorts and about 10 male escorts at any point, and a couple of escorts in between. So they're not confirming as male or female. And to manage them means to get to know all of them and to get to know their talents and to know how to match them to which clients and what type of booking. I couldn't possibly do that with 100 escorts. The escorts I work with, they're interesting because they have something else outside of escorting that it makes them interesting as a person. So they easily reach the maximum amount of bookings they could do. So let's say out of the 50 escorts I work with, they would have only time to do 3 to 10 bookings a month. So you can calculate that you easily reach a maximum for the business that you're running, which is perfectly fine, because when you reach that maximum, you'll start perfectioning and tweaking your business to make it more efficient, but also to further perfect your services or to maybe think of something more innovating compared to your competitor. So, but it's not the type of business that I will not be the next Bill Gates. I don't want to be. So that's it.
So that's a very interesting approach for someone who is an entrepreneur, that you've decided that it can only be so big. You seem super content about it, but I wonder why you couldn't scale that. Could you create what you do in your head, or is it that you believe that you can't put down this formula that you decide on, not just on people who work with you, but clients? Do you not think that you could teach someone and all of your sort of nuances that you have and then be able to scale the business?
No, I don't think it's possible. I think if you lose touch with the people you work with, you can't manage a business like this, not properly. So having a branch outside of the Netherlands, it's a no-go. I think you have to be on top of it.
So then you just raise your prices.
Yeah. Well, I could, but I want to remain slightly reasonable. I mean, it's a high-end escort service. It doesn't have to be affordable to everybody. I mean, it's not like a basic necessity that you're meeting. It remains a luxury service. But I don't think more money means better service. And I couldn't argue why I would increase the rates beyond what they are now. Other than that, my energy company has been doing the same in the last year for no reason at all. And many, many businesses have. But no, for the time being, I think the rates are a reflection of the quality of service.
This episode is sponsored by the Halle Financial Team at Expert Lending. Buying a house in today's market is competitive, and you need a lender that can close fast and get you the very best rate. The team is licensed in 48 states and has over 20 years experience in the real estate and lending space, and access to lending rates that most mortgage brokers can't get. I know, because I'm an investor in the team. If you need a mortgage or know someone that does, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086 and talk to a real human who will give you the customer service you deserve. Again, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086. Now back to the show. So do you approach it as an entrepreneur that you then take, I'm just stepping out from here and saying, you have this business, whether it goes a little bit bigger or not, you know you're not going to be able to double and keep your quality, your brand, all of the things that are very important to you. So do you take the money that it makes and then reinvest it into other businesses? Do you have other business ventures that you can use this as a cash flow machine for to fund it? Or do you just stay where you are and be excited that you have this?
So most of the money I made, I invested in stocks and in real estate, and I managed that as well. Yeah. But I couldn't imagine possibly running another business like I am now. I'd be so busy. I would have absolutely no time for the other things I enjoy in my life. And that's also worth something. So I think.
Well, sure, because you can't go ahead.
Yeah. I think that the money is only, it's only an issue if you desire a lifestyle that you currently can't afford. I have luckily the lifestyle that I desire, and I do not desire to have a gigantic house and a huge car. So I'm satisfied. So there's no need for me to work like a crazy person and have no life outside of my work. I am more than Marieke, the owner of Society Service. I'm also Marieke, the close friend or the partner. So, and that also takes time, and that's also valuable.
So that's very interesting because you used the word satisfied, and I've been working on this idea. I don't know if it'll ever turn into a book, Marieke, but what is happiness? And my premise is, after all the books I've read, I did a master's in psychology, like probably to figure that out if we're really analyzing things. And I think you just have to want what you have.
No, you have to want just a teeny tiny bit more.
Let's talk about that just for a minute.
Yeah, for me, happiness lies with being satisfied with what I have, but always wanting just a teeny tiny bit more that keeps me driven. And that makes me wake up in the morning and think, oh, today I'm going to do this and this and this. So my life always remains challenging in a good way. If I look around I would look around and think, okay, I'm done. I don't think that would be fun. I don't think that would bring me happiness.
I don't disagree. I think you and I agree. I would explain it differently in that you have to want what you have currently, which you would define as satisfied.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you don't have goals that drive you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because otherwise you remain in this state of unsatisfied and unhappy because you're trying to attain this other thing. I think you and I agree on that. I'm just trying to explain it because if you want to write a book on this, you actually have to build it into a formula. And I don't know that I'll ever get there because every time I have this discussion, it leads to something else. And it's sort of, and everybody has their own definition of it. And it's very hard to get people to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't ask people, hey, Manrique, out of the blue, are you happy? No one's going to be like, oh, I'm totally unhappy. I mean, some people want to say that and they want to put all this stuff on you. But for the most part, it's a deep question.
Well, the Dutch are pretty straightforward, though.
Well, that is very true. I have found that. I want to go back to something before I forget. Marieke, you said that in the beginning, you found it very hard to strike a work, life, health. I'm adding mm-hmm. that type balance in there. I have been of the opinion, having been doing the business thing for 2 decades, running businesses, maybe a little bit longer, that in order to do something great and really be at your peak performance of whatever you do, whether you're running your business, whatever you're doing, biking, running, car racing, whatever, playing football, whatever that is, that there is just no way to keep this ideal balance around a pie chart that says 33 mind, body, spirit balance. Like, I've never seen anyone do anything incredible that's worthy of talking about in the sense of this extraordinary that would tell you yeah, I have a balance. So how have you been able to approach that?
Well, I think my idea of balance does not align with other people's idea of balance. I think the amount of hours that I put into my work, it is more, and the commitment is more than I would say the average person who works for a company in many positions. I don't think the workload will be like this, and nor the stress load. So you'll, as an entrepreneur, you'll have to deal with that. But I was looking back, I think 5 years ago, my workload was crazy. And there's no way I could have pulled that off for another 10 years. My work was too much. It was really out of balance at a certain point. And it's also around the time that I started to make serious money. And luckily, I decided that part of this money I was going to spend on making my life easier and making my life more relaxed, and to delegate some tasks and to hire more people and to change my goals from making money to having better work, private life balance. And I think it was a good decision, because I couldn't have done that another 10 years.
But if you didn't do it, you wouldn't have gotten there to making what you say is serious money.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think hard work comes along with being an entrepreneur. Yeah. And I consider myself very lucky that at that point I was able to make other choices. To make choices where I prioritize further perfectioning a service over making more money, or prioritize having time off over making money, or have higher expenses but having more free time. In the first 5 years, I couldn't have made those same decisions.
Do you think it takes about that long to get a business to where you've actually figured it out and you can make money? It seems to me that in my life, one way or the other, you know, you really don't get a business going, meaning you figured it out, you can get it profitable enough that it's really like 5 to 7 years.
I agree that would go for many, many businesses. I mean, you always have businesses based on a brilliant idea that comes very quickly and reaches a certain top high point very quickly, but it may also go down really quickly after that. I think a sustainable business, to get things sorted, to get the experience you're looking for, to build the network in a way that allows you to rely on it. And I think you're right to say that takes 5 to 7 years. Yeah.
What was the first service that you bought to make your life easier after you started making money?
Accountancy. I really hate doing that.
So you were doing all of the... So in the beginning, you didn't outsource anything. You were doing everything. Accounting, appointments, interviews, scheduling, branding, marketing.
Yeah. Well,
but
everything I could do myself, I did. So... For instance, accounting wise, the difference is that if you run a limited, I'm not sure what it's called in the US.
LLC.
Yeah, LLC. You have to have an accountant to a registered accountant to make your annual taxes, et cetera, et cetera. But all the little stuff in between, I would do myself. That I quit the minute I could. And another thing that I spent a lot of money on, but eventually saves me so much time, is that I have this application built, tailor-made just for me, for my company, to manage my bookings, manage the administrative part that allows the people I work with to log in and review all the information. Basically, it does everything I needed to do, and it saves me at least 2 or 3 hours of work each day. Best investment ever.
How did you figure out how to write or get someone to build software? Because that's hard.
Luckily, my SEO, I have a guy who does my search engine optimization, and he knew a company that could build the application for me. And I'd hired this IT consultant at first, and then you start looking at, is there already software on the market that could do what I'm looking for? And the answer was no, there wasn't. There would always be something wrong. The main thing that would be wrong would be that it doesn't secure the data enough. In my line of business, discretion is super important. I can't have my details out on the street. So that criteria was often not met. So the end conclusion was you'll have to have it built. And that's very expensive. It's that, it, having your, yeah, having an application built like that, it's easily 200K. Yeah.
It is. I think people underestimate how hard it is to build software and the amount of detail that you have to explain. Marika, I go back to when I was in, I can't remember quite, it was either third grade or fifth grade. There was a homework assignment that said, go home and write how to build a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And you had to write all the steps. And the next day, everybody came in and put their homework in a box, picked it out, and there was peanut butter and jelly in the front of the room with a knife and bread. And you had to follow the directions exactly.
Yeah.
How to do it. And I will never forget it because I was sitting there and I remember I said, I forgot to say spread the peanut butter, spread the jelly. So there's this clump of peanut butter and jelly. And it was a very, very important lesson in my life that sometimes you really have to explain things, and building software is basically that.
Yeah.
So that's a, how long did that take you?
You have this phase in the beginning that's it's like the storytelling phase. So you'll talk with your developers and you'll say, as a client, I'm logging in and I see a screen that says A, B, and C. And if I click on A, then this and this happens. If I click on like that, or as an employee, I want to log in, and if I click on this, that will happen. Or the simplest things, like what happens if you log out? You know, you all have to go through it, and it took half a year at least. And to have the thing built, also another half year, and tested and running it and adjusting things. I think it took a good year and a half for it to be fully up and running. Yeah. And when I first started, I thought, easy peasy. It's a CRM system with a bit of admin and a scheduling attached to it. I mean, how difficult can it be? It was way more than I anticipated.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. I think it's good for listeners and anybody building the application. I tend to agree with you that there is a lot of good software out there, but unless it's built for your industry, basically some software company that sells escort software.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find something that does everything. And then you wind up hacking it together. And in the long run, I think sometimes it's better to build that software. It can be expensive, but needed. But I appreciate you sharing that because you just described the agile software process from a non-technical person. So that someone out there who wants to build software understands that you actually have to write exactly what you said, which is, I'm a user. I do X. Here's what's on the screen.
Yeah.
Here's the options and here's what's happened. And you got to keep doing that.
Well, and keep in mind that usually those companies who build those apps, they are discussing this with the IT manager. I'm not an IT manager. I don't know anything about IT. So sometimes, you know, putting it in layman's terms made it easier, but other times it was quite a challenge. And it's not a field that you can read up on and then you'll get it. It's very difficult. So, yeah.
So switching gears a little bit, I want to ask you, what did you buy? What was the first thing you bought for I understand the first thing you did was get rid of accounting.
Yeah.
Because you hated that, and then eventually you had to build an app and things like that. But what did you buy for yourself? The first thing that I did when I could really afford it was I didn't buy a cleaning lady. I hired a cleaning person to come to our house because I was actually conflicted about it because I used to really get a lot of thinking time when I would vacuum and things. So I was thinking, I got a lot of good ideas. It's like your body's on automatic, like when you go shower, but my wife and I it's like 3 hours on a weekend that was just wasted that we could have hung out together or done something.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing we did was get a cleaning person. What did you do?
I bought a house.
Oh.
Yeah. So being excluded from services and businesses, one of them is being excluded from having a mortgage. So you'll have to, so by the time you can actually afford it, you'll be able to get the mortgage, but then you no longer need it. Until then, you'll be declined to have a mortgage. So the first thing I bought was a house.
I think that's really worth talking about because that's a big problem that I don't think entrepreneurs, and when someone comes to me and says they're going to leave a job to start a business, the first thing I say is, do you want to move? Do you own a house? Do you want to own a house? Because banks do not understand. Well, they may understand it enough that they don't take risks on it. They will not give you a mortgage very easily if you're a business owner, even if your business is profitable.
Yeah. And add to that, the whole escort business to it, it makes them even less likely to loan you any money. Yeah. 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 I think people really underestimate the consequences of managing a business. I think the liability you take on as an entrepreneur, it's gigantic. And not only of yourself, but if you're married, also of your spouse.
What do you mean by that?
So if I'm married and I share everything with my husband and I go bankrupt as a person, he goes bankrupt.
Right. Yeah. I wanted you to say that because I think that oftentimes our biggest partner, our most important partner in business, putting that in air quotes, is your significant other, whether that's a husband or wife or whomever. That's really at the end of the day, the person that's in the fight with you every day. And they suffer. They suffer the consequences when you don't have the time. They suffer if you screw up financially. They do benefit from the upside, but by the same token, there's a price that they pay. You and I just talked about a few minutes ago, if you hadn't done that, I call it sprint for 5 years. But along that, if you have a partner, they're in that ride too.
Yes.
It's really good to generally have a conversation about it because I think sometimes partners don't quite understand what that means until they're far enough into it to say, oh, I didn't realize that you're going to have to work 12 hours a day.
Yeah. And you're going to, significant other is at the end of the day, the person closest to you. And if you're having a bad day at work, you're likely to also have a little bit of a bad day at home. And they'll have to put up with that as well.
I think you're right. You know, I learned that lesson just from doing it for many years. And I don't know how you handle it, but from a behavioral standpoint, putting my psychology hat on, I was deconstructing the behavior. And basically what happens is it's very hard to leave things at work. Everyone's like, just leave it at work. Well, it's not like a bag. Like it happened. It drained you. Yeah. You're annoyed or whatever. But what I did when I used to come home actually and not work at home, which I worked at home a lot, but is I would use a doorway as a trigger. So I created a behavior that when I went through the doorway, I would become a happy person. I'm making that simple. It's harder than it sounds, but basically I'm creating these triggers just like you would train an animal. And it actually worked because when you think about it, one is you have to train yourself on that behavior, which you do. But second of all, you're really just, it's like you come home and you're already drained. And if you're going to bring that home, it's going to cause more stress. And you're not going to go to zero. You're going to go negative.
Mm-hmm.
And once you do that, it's very hard to recover.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm very lucky with my partner who can read me like that. He'll be able to tell if I'm stressed or if I'm too busy or if something is up. He'll just leave me be for just, I don't know, like 15 minutes is usually enough. And then he'll come and give me a hug and say, we're all good. And you want to talk about it. And then, you know, sometimes you talk about it. Sometimes I'm like, no, let's just leave it and let's just have dinner and talk about something else. But I think the finding a good significant other is as challenging as running a business. And I'm lucky to have mine. But I mean, he gets to deal with me being cranky on occasion, but he also gets to deal with the upsides. I don't have to ask my boss to take time off. I am free to go whenever, wherever I want. I have a lot of flexibility. I can afford a comfortable lifestyle. So I think it's being an entrepreneur made me the person that I am today. So there are also upsides. And I always say you have to look at both sides of the medallion, not just the ugly version or the good version. There are two sides.
I think you're right. I think something that's very important, that is a very powerful tool that people don't use enough, which is what your partner does, which is just hugging. Yeah. Human touch can change dynamic in an instant.
Tell me about it. I run a business around it.
Good point. But it really can, right? Yeah. Like, and I think maybe, yeah, right. There you go. That was a slow pitch.
I have clients saying I could have just saved all that money for the therapist and just booked an escort every other week. Way more fun, way more energizing. At the end of the day, even cheaper.
Well, probably. And there's another part to that that I wonder, which is if they have a partner and they still use an escort service, I wonder, like, how much effort would it really be to touch your partner? And I'm not saying sexual. I'm just saying sometimes all you have to do is put your hand on somebody's back or rub their leg or give them a hug. I mean, the dynamic changes in a minute. Mm-hmm. Because it signals that you're not at odds with another. And I think that as relationships go on and people stop doing that, it perpetuates itself and it becomes this scary thing that then, you know, just it all hell goes loose. But I wanted to talk about that because it is absolutely true how much that can change any dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, the escorts that I talk to after each booking, I talk to the escort. And quite often I hear that the client in question loves his wife or her husband very, very much, but there's no intimacy, not within the marriage. I'm not saying sex within the marriage. Sometimes it goes hand in hand, but often it's more about intimacy that's lacking, which eventually will make people look for it elsewhere.
Well, maybe you're providing a service that they get practice, because I think people are under the wrong illusion that it just continually happens over time. Having been in a relationship for 27 years, I think, I can tell you that it can be easy, but it takes work.
Yeah.
It's not just magical. Like, I mean, you're growing as a person and you're going to take things for granted and you're going to have to practice those things. So, but it really is. We sort of went down this rabbit hole on this, but it's really important because you're taking care of your partner in this goal that you're, or adventure really, that you're doing is really important. Because otherwise, you know, it's real easy to lose your partner along the way.
Yeah. And especially you say you've been together 27 years. Let's say you started together in university. A lot happens in those 27 years. And it's very well possible somewhere along the line, you went that way and your partner goes that way. Yeah. If you're in such a long-term relationship to develop in the same direction and to keep the same goals in life and the same things that make you happy, I think it's rather rare. And it's not easy.
I
and
think
it doesn't
so.
come. Well, it comes naturally for some people, but it doesn't come without effort.
I'll tell you what I think the key has been. I think the key is having an already existing life and the other person having an existing life as well, so that you're not codependent and you're not insecure. What happens is what you just said, which for those listening, we're really like graphing a thing, people going apart from one another. But the truth is that what happens is one person gets insecure and they get scared that that's going to change something. And if you are secure, everybody has some insecurity. Let's just be honest. I mean, if you peel back the onion, everybody has something. But if you're secure enough, then you can handle that. And more often than not, I think that happens is that somebody gets scared and they get spooked. And look, sometimes things don't work out. That's life. But I think if it starts off in a good foundation, like a business with a good model, then it can continue.
Yeah.
What's been the hardest thing for you building your business to where it is?
Oof. Well, I've had many challenges along the way. I think one of the first challenges I had to deal with was the not being liked by people purely because of the line of work I do. If you're in your 20s, that's a pretty tough thing to deal with, the constant criticism, and that's, and the criticism isn't always that constructive. It can be really blunt and really ugly. And to be above that and to deal with that, I think that in my first half of having society service was the biggest challenge. Yeah. And I think then to change from a financial goal to a further perfecting my services and my work private life balance became the second hurdle I had to jump.
I think everybody struggles with not being liked or having that. It's human nature. People want to be liked. I think I got to a point in my life where I just pretty much decided that I think I saw the other day that there's 8 billion people on Earth now. 8 billion people. Like, we're all not going to like one another. It doesn't mean we can't work with one another if we respect one another, but not everybody is going to like me, and I'm not going to like everyone else. And that sounds really simple, but if you can get your head around it, it really is very freeing. Was that, how did you, did you have some tool, or did you just eventually just say, hey, look, the hell with it, I'm moving on?
Yeah, I just decided to no longer care. Yeah, I never thought it would have been that easy. I just, one day I just decided, you know what, just let them think that I'm a bad person for running this business. I know I'm not. And there are plenty of people who love me a lot. So let's make the opinion of the people who love me much more important than those that I don't know. Anybody can put anything on the internet. And another thing is, when it comes to people you work with, you say you don't have to like everybody, but you'll be able to work with them and respect them. This line of work, the commitment level of the people I work with can be a bit tricky, because this is not a career path. It's something they often hide from their environment, or they only share with a couple of people. And it's not like they start a career with me and then they'll grow into a bigger position within the company. That doesn't happen. It's always something that they do temporarily. And to make someone committed to your business and to offering a great service that is beneficial both financially as well as to makes you grow as a person, because you get a lot of people skills and it provides you with great experiences, to make someone committed to that can be a bit of a challenge as well, I think. And to deal with that.
I think dealing with that is the hard part. But I find it very, I guess people do, there's this thing that people say that they just reach their limit. So for you, it's you reach the limit and then you moved on, and then you deal with the everyday struggles and try to shake it off. And to what you said earlier, I find it very interesting now, like everybody has an opinion about Twitter lately based on what's going on. And if people would just take all that energy and focus on themselves,
the world would be a much better place.
I've actually asked some of these people. I asked someone the other day on Twitter, because this guy was going off on Elon Musk. I said, why do you spend so much energy hating the guy who owns the platform that you're posting on? And he said, well, you have a good point. I'm just piling on. Mm. And I was like, does that really make you, like, why don't you try to put some positive energy in the world? But I'm not going to change the world. I just was really, after a while, it sort of gets old. And I think you do just have to move on, because there's always going to be somebody who says something about you, and it's probably their insecurity, not yours.
Yeah, and it's much nicer to focus on the things that are positive. I mean, on a daily basis, I receive emails from clients and from escorts who say, oh, the booking was so nice. I had a stressful week at work, and now I'm all like energized for, you know, to get ready for the next assignment. Or they'll say, oh, we had a mind blowing time in an amazing restaurant. Great to talk to a person. Really brings up your spirits. And that you bring together to people who share an experience that makes their life a better and a more beautiful place. It's much nicer to focus on that. Because people think usually that if you run an escort service, it's only a sexual service. It's not. The intimacy and sexuality is definitely part of the experience, but it's only a small part. The social and mental aspect of a booking is much greater and of much more importance than someone's beauty or someone's bedroom skills, for example. It's not what people think, but it's the reality.
I can imagine that. I was thinking about the movies that are always made around this, and I want to wrap up, be respectful of your time, but I do want to ask this question because it just came to mind is, does it happen? And if so, how do you handle when that relationship, because it is intimate, mm-hmm. starts to go beyond the service? I mean, doesn't that become hard as a human on both sides to segment, so to speak?
Well, it's very normal for a client to feel feelings of love or being in love towards the escort, because there she is, your ideal woman, on time, dressed as requested, entertaining your conversations and your jokes and making an effort to get to know you. Even if the conversation is less flowing as you want it to be, she'll make it work. And then you'll share something quite intimate, and it will be beyond what you usually experience when you first share your bed with someone. So it's only natural people will get feelings of falling in love. And I try to explain to clients that enjoy this, enjoy the feeling, but don't forget that before her arrival, you transfer 2,000 euros to an account. So don't forget the business aspect. Just enjoy whatever feeling comes from it. But I'm not going to tell them a fairy tale and say, oh, you know, maybe if things would have been different and you would have met up in a bar, you would have been lovey-dovey boyfriend, girlfriend. No, it's not this. It is a commercial service. And I don't have to hide that.
So has there ever been a relationship that came out?
Sure.
People got married? So there, we'll end on that. That could be a very happy ending for people. No pun intended. If you were to offer people I didn't even practice that. For listeners, we didn't even coordinate. This is the first time we've actually talked. If you were to leave the listeners with 3 HPTs, high percentage tips about all the lessons you've learned from building arguably a hard business to build and building a top business, and or what you've learned through the experience in life, what 3 things, you only get to say 3, what 3 pieces of advice would you offer?
I think they're pretty corny, but I would say do what you love, work hard for it, and as soon as you can, spend money on making your life better instead of making more money. That's it. Sounds easy, doesn't it?
I think that, sometimes simple is better than some complicated thing. That's a very good formula. So thanks for offering it. For anybody listening who would be interested in your service, where can they find you?
They would go to www.societyservice.com.
We will put that in the show notes for everyone. You can check it out. Thanks so much for being on the show and sharing your story. It's a fascinating business to have built, and congratulations on doing it, because it is actually not as easy as someone might think out there. So thanks for taking time out of your day to share everything.
You're welcome.
You did.
And thanks for having me.
Bye, everyone.